Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. I'm Amanda Farrow.
And I'm Michael Footer.
Each episode, we'll cover the biggest business beats and bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros. This is episode 76, Discord's Playing the Dating Game for $10 billion.
I'm excited. I'm really excited to talk about this Discord story.
I'm really excited to talk about this Discord story as well, because you wrote about it and it was a great story.
Indeed. So as we promised at the end of last week's show, we have started doing weekly writing on the Virtual Economy website.
We're writing again.
Yeah, you can check that out at virtualeconcast.com. This week, I wrote an analysis piece about the reported Discord acquisition, evaluating four of the major suitors, including Microsoft, Google, Twitter was on the list.
Considering what Twitter did to Periscope, no thank you.
Yeah, and then Amazon. I did not include Facebook because
that would never fly.
I don't think it would fly. I think that's like so worst case scenario that I would want to drink bleach before using a Discord owned by Facebook.
Yeah.
And what did you write about?
I wrote about Animal Crossing.
You did.
I didn't just write about Animal Crossing, though. I wrote about Animal Crossing in terms of its cultural significance and in terms of, like, what it did for the industry. Not just for Nintendo, either. I actually wrote about the merchandising licensing as well and some of the big partnerships that Animal Crossing enjoyed throughout 2020 and then into 2021.
And one of my favorite takeaways, without spoiling the entire piece, is just how important Animal Crossing has been on the Switch versus previous entries.
It was really interesting. And I definitely go into that, and I compare attach rates and compare sales and everything like that in comparison to how New Leaf ended up selling.
Yeah, now we can just hope that Metroid gets that same kind of love. I'm not going to let you rain on my parade. It's the beginning of the show. There will be plenty of time for that.
I'm going to rain on his parade later.
Kicking off the news show.
Oh, boy.
So we have a couple of Sony stories. The first one, we want to acknowledge a report from The Gamer that indicated that Sony will be ending storefront services for the PlayStation 3, the PlayStation Portable, and Vita later this year.
No!
Well, it's a giant no for a lot of reasons.
It really is. Yeah. Because if this happens, it'll also mean that digital games will not be accessible for owners, at least on the handheld.
So we actually, following this report, mm-hmm. I dove in, I powered up my Vita, which thankfully continues to work.
And Vita means life.
Yeah, Vita does mean life, and thankfully my battery did not explode, and I know that was happening to some people, yep. Right?
Well, especially with the V1 Vitas.
Which is what I have.
Yeah, and mine's V2.
Mm-hmm. So I also hooked up the PlayStation TV, which is essentially a Vita that can play some, but not all, of the Vita's games. So it was a stark reminder of how bad the architecture was for the storefront, because in order to get to your download list, you know, on the PlayStation 4, there's that library.
Yeah, tab, of which course.
We all take for granted these days on both the Xbox. And in fact, I wrote a story for Game Informer about how much better it was to game on the PC because I could actually look at all of my games in my Steam library. And this was in 2013 before the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 kind of implemented those library features.
For sure.
In order to access the download list for the Vita, and I think for the PSP, I haven't booted mine up yet, you have to go through the store. So if there is no storefront, how do you access games? Now, we went through this with the Wii.
We did go through this with the Wii, because when they shut down the Nintendo Wii eShop, yes. I guess.
And there was a virtual console in the eShop. There were two different pieces.
That's right, right. When they shut all of that down, it was a nightmare for a lot of those smaller games that were available exclusively on the Nintendo Wii eShop.
Mm-hmm.
And you just can't get to them anymore. Like they, it's like they never existed.
Now, what the interesting thing is with the Wii, it was the Wii U. And you could access, I guess, some of the stuff on the Wii U. You could hook up a hard drive to the Wii U.
Yeah, you could not do that with the original.
You could not do that. And here's the thing. Because Vita memory was, A, super expensive because it was proprietary.
It was so expensive. I remember picking up my Vita in 2016, and I recognized that I was late to the game with Vita. But I picked it up in 2016, and I remember how expensive and shockingly expensive that memory was, because I bought my Vita secondhand.
Mm-hmm. So Yeah, you can't just go out and be like, oh, I'm going to buy 128 gigabyte SD card and be good to go. The other thing is, because obviously by now most of these games have been pirated, and there's a way to break the protection on a PSP and a Vita.
And
it's not the preferred way. I would prefer to buy my games and have access to games.
Yes. But this also does exacerbate and call attention to the deep-seated issues that we have within the game industry with regards to preservation. It's part of the reason why, like, and believe me, HitSave has been blowing up all week talking about what we're going to do about this and how we will be able to help, if there's anything that we can do on the preservation side of the equation. It's not as though people haven't been expecting this, so this didn't come as a huge shock for the preservation community, but for this is something that's so important, and it is absolutely misaligned with how publishers and platform holders view gaming.
Yeah, absolutely.
They view it as something that is very, okay, you have it in the moment and now it's gone, move on. No, no, we have archives of films. We have archives of, you know, of television shows, of books.
And you've got like Criterion Collection where they're releasing these movies. Like, it is very hard to come up with. Now, there are times where code's lost, right? There was the whole Ninja Gaiden thing that hit this week where they couldn't access code from Ninja Gaiden Black with one of the games.
Yeah.
So they're including Sigma and Sigma 2 in that Ninja Gaiden collection. And they said, we lost some of the code. It's not salvageable.
Right. And I mean, the nice thing about modern coding practices is that you do use source vaults and everything like that to take care of your code. For essentially for future proofing it so that it'll always be there.
Mm-hmm. And this was a conversation we had around Final Fantasy VIII when it was the one game in that series that took so long to come out. And then we found out, like, yeah, they had to compile stuff, and
they had to reverse engineer a lot of it. They had to reverse engineer the source in order to, you know, build a new game essentially.
So we'll have more conversations about preservation, and we will go deeper on this story once Sony makes a comment, but it is shocking that Sony said nothing about this week. About this week.
I genuinely thought that we would have heard something.
We would have definitely heard something if it wasn't true. So I would say at this point, operate under the belief that even if some details change around it, whether it's the dates or the mechanisms in which these things happen, that these storefronts are likely to be going away. It is likely to be within the next 6 to 9 months. And Sony needs to address what it's going to do for Vita and PSP owners, especially because this ain't great. Then there's the other piece of the story where Can It Play is the name of that Twitter account, where they identified that if your CMOS battery dies on your PlayStation 3, it uses that to hold the date and connect with the servers and all that and authenticate. Your digital games, even if you download them to your PS3, might be toast anyway. And then there was the story about the PS4, where because the trophy system requires connection to their servers and the clock and all that stuff. If they pull the servers down, then disc-based games won't even work. Though that, I believe, is something that can probably fix with a software patch.
That is some firmware patch. Honestly, that's some scary stuff. That is some genuinely scary stuff, knowing that even if we're just thinking about this from a pure practicality perspective, we have hundreds, thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
In our gaming library over the course of the many, many years that you and I have been gaming. And I can't imagine just losing access to a good chunk of our vault.
Yeah. And we have a huge physical library because to prevent against things like this. And certainly we have a lot of digital games, but yikes. So
on bikes.
Yes. So we're going to hold any further analysis on that until we know exactly what's going on. But it was such a big story. And does stand to be such an enormous story over the next 6 to 9 months that we wanted to make sure that we acknowledged the gamer's work and that report.
Yeah, absolutely. It was an excellent piece.
So we have one more. There's another piece of the whole Sony conversation this week.
There is, because Sony went through some significant restructuring for the organization.
Yes. John Cadera, who was previously deputy president of Sony Interactive Entertainment, is moving out of the PlayStation organization entirely and taking over the digital transformation strategy for the Sony Group. Cadera, as you might remember, succeeded Andy House as president and CEO of Sony Interactive Entertainment.
And that didn't happen too long ago either. That was relatively recent.
Andy was there.
Two or three years?
Yeah, I think the last time I saw Andy was the last Gamescom that Sony did a real big press conference. So that might have been, like, 2014 or 2015. I mean, he hasn't been gone. Like, Andy was there for a long time. I interviewed him 3 or 4 times, I think.
But how long has he been in this role specifically?
I think this all happened with the shuffling around Jim Ryan.
That's what I figured.
Yeah.
So it's been for the last 2 to 3 years that he's been in this position. So that's... That's very interesting. Like Mike mentioned, Kadera has been with the company since 1992 and has been integral to PlayStation's online offerings, including PlayStation Store and PlayStation Plus, PlayStation Now. Gosh, I wish they would do something with PlayStation Now.
Yeah.
PlayStation View, PlayStation Video, and PlayStation Music.
This really feels like another move. Remember when Jim Ryan took over, essentially Kadera was demoted.
Yeah.
And now he's leaving the PlayStation organization entirely. And I think that's a big loss for PlayStation.
It's not great. It's really not great. And to me, from my perspective, it speaks to some potential issues with leadership.
Yeah. And again, this is all happening in the midst of this big announcement like, hey, we're going to screw your digital libraries. Or not announcement, I'm sorry, the report.
The report. And the
silence on that front.
Correct, yeah.
So the other note here is Hideki Nishino has been promoted. He's now the Senior VP of Platform Experience and will oversee network engineering and operations, R&D, design, data strategy and operations. He's also going to manage product and platform development. He's been with Sony since 2000 and was involved with both PS4 and PS5 development. He's going to report directly to Jim Ryan.
Yeah, that's some moving and shaking within the organization. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what kinds of ripples this is going to end up having over the long term.
Yep. And again, it might be completely transparent. Like, the end users might not sense anything. It might just be staying the course,
yeah,
given Jim Ryan at the helm, but we'll see. So yeah, so that's what's going on with Sony. We do have M&A Minute.
Is it an actual minute?
It probably will not be.
Yeah, this isn't.
It's probably going to be M&A Minutes.
Yes, this is going to be M&A multiple minutes because, yeah, hey, guess what, everyone? There's a lot of M&A stories again.
Only half as many as last week, though.
As a refresher, we had 18 M&A stories last week, so that is a low bar.
Yep, so our M&A Minute, which minutes, isn't just acquisitions. We've also included investments in
this.
Yes,
absolutely.
Because we think it's important. When you look at those reports that came out, when we talked about this in our trends piece, which is also available at virtualeconcast.com.
I like that.
Well, thank you. We also talked about the amount of investment that was made in the industry in 2020.
It was incredible.
So it's why we include not just mergers and acquisitions, but we include significant investments.
Yeah.
So that's angel investing and seed investing and your regular funding rounds and all that fun stuff. So what's up first?
So up first, I took a look at this and I was like, wait a second, why is TikTok in here? But TikTok owner ByteDance has acquired Moonton Technology, creator of iOS and Android MOBA Mobile Legends Bang Bang.
Mobile Legends Bang Bang. And every time I hear that, I laugh. It is...
I wasn't going to. I was going to be professional about it.
It is the most mobile game name.
I'm doing finger guns again. I can't wait.
Probably has like an angry guy looking to the right.
Bang Bang. Anyway. This is why I can't wait until we're actually, like, we stream this and people can see our faces as we giggle about these kinds of things. Bang, bang! The deal is valued at 4 billion bells. According to ActivePlayer.io, the game had nearly 78 million active players in the last 30 days.
That is nothing
to
sneeze at.
No.
2K Games has acquired Hook Bang.
That's another bang.
So many bangs so up many front. So many bangs. So many bells, so many bangs.
So many bells, so many bangs.
2K Games has acquired Hookbang, which is described as, quote, a solutions-based collective of engineers, artists, and designers that provide full-service software design and development for brands, agencies, and technology companies. That is a mouthful.
It is a mouthful.
And they are no longer going to be called Hookbang! The team is being rebranded as Visual Concepts Austin, and they previously contributed art, design, and engineering support for NBA 2K21. No terms were disclosed.
Of course, no terms were disclosed. Modern Times Group, otherwise known as MTG, has announced the acquisition of Bloons developer and publisher Ninja Kiwi. The deal is worth 1.217 million krona upfront, which approximates to $142 million US, with a max of 406 million krona in earnout, $47.4 million US. Now, as a refresher, MTG owns ESL, which is the esports league, and DreamHack.
Yep.
So that is a monstrous.
It's a big company.
That's a monstrous company.
Yep.
And that's like, they are some of the biggest movers and shakers in esports events.
Absolutely.
So that's neat.
Yep. Iron Source, a company that specializes in mobile monetization, is going public. The company will use a SPAC for a special purpose acquisition company. This is really interesting.
This is really cool.
So essentially, the company acquiring Iron Source doesn't really have operations other than to raise capital. They're like a blank slate or a blank check company is what they're called.
Oh, interesting.
Essentially, all they do is raise the money, and they are nothing until the acquisition. And then they have operations and a purpose. All that stuff.
Interesting.
It's partnered with a PIPE investment. That's private investment from public equity.
What
so essentially
is that?
Institutional investors make a deal to purchase shares privately below market value.
Oh.
So these two things usually go hand in hand.
There are so many
different interesting things we're talking about. We've talked about stock shorting, and we've talked about direct listings, and we've talked about IPOs, obviously. Now we're talking about SPACs.
And pipes.
SPACs
and pipes.
Why do this? This speeds up the process of going public. Now, when you go public through an IPO, you've got to file with the SEC, and then you have to file your S-1, which is like hundreds of pages long, and then you have to wait a certain amount of time before you can actually list, and then it's just a process.
It's a long process. So in this case, Iron Source is combining with an existing SPAC.
Mm-hmm.
Toma Bravo Advantage, which is currently public and traded on the New York Stock Exchange.
So essentially what happens is you've got this company that's just an investment company. They're essentially a shell. And they're publicly traded already. And then they acquire Iron Source, and that is what makes Iron Source a publicly traded company. It's really weird,
that's
right?
That's such a strange way of doing it. I respect that because, oh my goodness, does that cut through a lot of the bureaucracy and the red mm-hmm. tape? But at the same time...
It's got to be the right fit.
It's got to be the right fit. Yep. Like it,
because you are still getting acquired. So Iron Source brought in revenue of $332 million in 2020 and had adjusted earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. The good old EBITDA.
Good old EBITDA.
Of $104 million.
That is nothing to say.
This one's real interesting.
This is neat. So yeah, Rec Room, which is a metaverse platform like Roblox and Core, has raised $100 million. Putting the company's valuation at 1.25 billion bells. As it turns out, Sequoia Capital and Index Ventures, which are both existing investors in the company, led the round with additional participation from another existing investor, Madrona Venture Group. So Rec Room launched in 2016 and has 15 million lifetime users.
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting to me.
Indeed.
And it saw incredible growth during the pandemic with earnings up, wait for it, this is Nintendo numbers here, 566%.
Yep. Rec Room is available as a VR app, so you can join a room and you can hang out with your friends in VR. In fact, that's one of their largest platforms, according to CEO Nick Fate, I think it is.
Yeah.
F-A-J-T. But is doing well on flat screen platforms, too. So Litecore, Rec Room will be starting to pay out via a creator compensation program. Remember, we talked about that a number of months ago on the show a couple times. It anticipates paying out more than $1 million this year, with creators adding 20,000 new rooms daily.
Interesting. Yeah, that is neat. And I mean, again, if we're looking at the trends throughout 2021, we did recognize that the metaverse was going to have a bigger... Mm-hmm. was going to end up being bigger and bigger and bigger for a lot of companies, and this continues to prove it.
Between this and Roblox and the Core stuff, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
HiDef, a new startup from former Daybreak general manager Anthony Castoro, Jace Hall, co-founder of Shadow of Mordor dev Monolith Productions, Rick Fox, founder of esports org Echo Fox, and former Obama staffer Dr. David Washington, has raised $9 million in seed and Series A funding.
Huh.
Yeah. So according to Castoro, HiDef will, quote, create games as a service that are designed to allow people to creatively express themselves and connect with one another in ways no other form of entertainment can. The $7.5 million Series A funding was led by Wick Capital Partners, and funds are going to be used for a, quote, genre-defining metaverse that places users of all ages at the creative center of its daily programming.
So this is clearly what Rick Fox has been up to
mm-hmm.
after everything fell apart with Echo Fox.
Yes.
Because, oh my goodness, was that a story?
That was a messy, messy, messy story.
That was very messy.
Yep.
But what's not messy, well, actually what is always messy is game development. But Frost Giant Studios has raised more funds for its first project. So we covered Frost Giant's founding and its initial... $4.7 million funding round in October of 2020. So to remind you, the studio was founded by Blizzard vets Tim Morton and Tim Campbell, so the Tim Squared, And the first game is going to be an RTS.
Of course, Blizzard vets who worked on StarCraft.
Of course. I want to see this game. This sounds really cool. So this new round of funding, it will amount to $5 million and comes from Kona Venture Partners, Global Founders Capital, RX Bar co-founder Jared Smith, and entrepreneur Eden Chen. These funds will be used to grow the staff.
Yep, absolutely.
Very cool.
It's time for Quick Hits.
All right. Looks like Niantic is teaming up with Nintendo again.
They are indeed.
This is really cool. So this time it's for an AR game based on Pikmin. We don't know anything about the game yet.
Except that it's not going to be called Pikmin Go.
It's right there.
It would be very confusing branding. Wait, Pikmin Go or Pokemon Go?
It's too much.
It is too much.
It's way too much. But it is very, very cool. I'm excited about this. I love Pikmin. I love Niantic and everything Niantic does. So I'm excited.
Yeah.
Want more of this.
Yeah, it's great. According to Sensor Tower, Genshin Impact has passed $1 billion in revenue, checks notes, on mobile alone.
Mobile alone? Yeah. What do they think they are? Pokemon?
Yeah, right? So there's obviously Genshin Impact available on PC and PlayStation 4 right now. It's going to be available on Switch at some point. But right now, mobile, $1 billion in revenue. It's been out for
so clearly, less than a year. Clearly I need to get myself one of those fancy backbone controllers and then I can start playing. What do you mean?
I think they're only for Android right now, aren't they?
No, they're not.
Oh, really?
You can use them on iOS.
Oh.
Lots of people have them on iOS.
Oh. Why are you looking at me like that? Do you want me to buy you a backbone controller? Is that what this is?
No. It was not that. But still, right? If I'm going to play it somewhere, it'll either be on Switch or That's on my fair. Phone.
I had problems. I played it on PC and I liked it, except it has some massive UI UX problems that are really difficult to navigate.
It's better on
PS4.
Yeah, I hear that those issues are at least mitigated on a touchscreen and on a console.
But you can't, there's no cross progression. Like, it's a different account on PS4. That's completely. Or on PC. Completely. Hopefully Switch fixes that nonsense.
Maybe? What do I know? What I do know, though, is that the team behind Disco Elysium, Studio Zaum? Zaum?
Zaum.
Zaum.
There's a slash in the middle.
Zaum. I love it. They're so great. Anyway, these are the brilliant people behind Disco Elysium, has announced a new clothing line inspired by the game. I might buy everything. So Zaum, oh God, I'm going to like it. That's forever now. I don't even care if it's not the right pronunciation. It's perfect. It's called The Atelier, and it is currently selling 3 jackets from the game, which is about to get a massive free update.
Yeah, so March 31st. Final cut. That final cut update with the Twitch
looks
integrations
amazing.
And stuff.
Amazing.
Yeah,
those excited. Twitch integrations look incredible. I don't know. I think that Mike and I are gonna end up streaming that game.
Yeah.
A little bit.
That's gonna be good.
That's gonna be
really good. Let's see. Amazon has opened up a new game studio in Montreal to focus on a new multiplayer IP. Amazon is still chasing that esports gold, it seems.
Oh boy.
New studio is gonna be led by former Ubisoft Montreal and Rainbow Six Siege team members. Luc Bouchard will be head of production. He was development director for technology at Ubisoft. Xavier Marquis will be creative director. He was creative director on Rainbow Six Siege. Alexandre Remy will be head of product. He was brand and esports director on Rainbow Six Siege. Romain Rimac will be content director. He was also a creative director on Rainbow Six Siege. And Amazon has had lots of false starts in gaming. Breakaway was canceled. Crucible was released and then unreleased and then canceled. And then New World is their best hope. That's their MMO, which was delayed. It was supposed to be out this spring and is now coming at the end of August.
I would like to play New World. It looks really interesting. Mm-hmm. And I'm very glad that they did some more scrutinizing on, hey, maybe imperialism is bad.
Yes.
That was pretty nice. So THQ Nordic has put some shape around their new Ashborn studio, which is located in the Czech Republic. So they open in October 2020, and the team will help support the development of Comanche, and then will turn towards its own new IP, a, quote, historical strategy with RPG elements. Go on, are you making a game for me?
Well, this reminds me of that the Vikings game that you liked.
I loved that game. I didn't just like that game. I loved Expeditions Viking.
That's it. That's the one.
It was so good, and logic artists, brilliant people working there. Like, that game did not get enough love. It did not get enough recognition for how utterly brilliant
it
was.
You should play it on stream.
Oh my god, this is a brilliant idea. I should. I'm going to turn into an Expedition Viking streamer.
Nice.
That's who I am now.
Microsoft is phasing out Xbox Live. Well, sort of.
Eh.
We do expect that the service will be merged with Game Pass or sunset entirely at some point, but Microsoft is paving the way for that by rebranding it. Goodbye, Xbox Live, and hello, generic, not offensive, not really a brand at all, Xbox Network, lowercase n. Microsoft tells The Verge that the change is to separate the Xbox Live service from the Xbox Live Gold memberships. Again, prying those apart is a predecessor to Xbox Live Gold as a necessity for online gaming potentially going away.
Yeah, it's time. It's absolutely time. And even if the necessity
for a paid service continuing to exist, it might not be through Xbox Live Gold. It might be through a Game Pass Lite, I heard somebody call it. Somebody wrote this week, and I can't remember who, about the need for something called Game Pass Lite, which would give you just the cloud gaming and maybe your online multiplayer.
Online multiplayer should be free.
I don't disagree. I know that there are costs associated with it. It's the business. And of course, because everything is so opaque in this industry, we don't really have a good understanding of the costs.
We really don't. But you know what I'm really excited to talk about? Do you know what I'm excited to talk about?
The next story.
Okay. I'm super excited to talk about this story. So, former Tango Gameworks dev and Ghostwire Tokyo creative director Ikumi Nakamura, otherwise known as everybody's fave from E3, has decided not to join a new studio. However, she is founding her own. We don't have many details yet, but she says her studio will be committed to diversity. In the documentary From Cutscenes, she announced this. She also describes crunch at Capcom with colleagues sleeping under their desks. She actually takes some time to, you know, talk about some of the not so great things about working at Tango.
It's hard to understand, and I watched this, and I saw the reports, and I wanted to watch it myself because the documentary is great, by the way. I think it's only 20 minutes long. It's absolutely worth watching.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the quote. Back in the Capcom days, my seniors would be sleeping under their desks to make games. They were passionate to that point. Although that wasn't the case anymore, when you get ideas and work in a team, there can be some problems with it. It arrived to the point where it got on my health. I took the decision to quit before it was too late. Now, the way that's written, clearly that has been translated not terribly well from her Japanese.
Sure. And from my perspective, what it sounds like is things... Because she came up in an environment where that was expected, and that if you were truly passionate, you would give everything that you had at every single point. And even if it wasn't required, she felt like it was just something she had to do to keep up with her colleagues, to keep up with the team, to keep up with expectations, even if they're unspoken.
Yep.
So that is as a result of old school crunch culture, not necessarily because... you know, Tango Gameworks was terrible or Capcom was terrible. It really, from my perspective, reads, listen, I came up through a culture that didn't require it, but did kind of expect it.
And she mentions her own health. And I read like three or four different stories from good outlets where this was being interpreted in very different ways. Oh, there was crunch at Tango Gameworks and therefore it made her sick. Or she had health problems and therefore...
Yeah,
so,
that's both. And both of these things honestly could be true.
Right. But because this was translated and edited and it was really hard, I'm not comfortable making my own interpretation of her words. I did reach out to Bethesda and I asked them like, hey, can you shine any light? I know you don't want to speak for her or can't speak for her, but could you give me an idea? Like, do you have any insight on what she's talking about here that maybe could help clarify? Unfortunately, I did not hear back from Bethesda, but I thought it was important to at least reach out and try to have that conversation to try to get the clarity. So my view on this right now, I like your interpretation where this is a cultural issue, and she's especially given the comments about how the culture that she wants to create in her own studio.
Especially with the comment of, although that wasn't the case anymore.
Yes.
Right? That was the thing for me that kind of pushed it toward, okay, well, things are not like that anymore, but I came up through this culture and it was expected. You know, even if it wasn't a spoken expectation, it was just something I felt like I had to do because everyone else was doing it, which is one of the things that we've talked about with regards to crunch culture being so insidious.
Yes.
And if the expectations are not communicated or they are communicated through action in such a way that makes it difficult for people to make good choices around their personal boundaries and around their health. I mean, what are you going to do?
Yep.
So I am not, just to be clear, I am not putting words in Ikumi's mouth.
No, I didn't think you were.
But that is the interpretation to me that it says, if I looked at her words with a broader context. So at any rate, let's talk about Psyonix.
Yes.
So Epic has announced that Psyonix, which Epic purchased in 2019, is launching a Rocket League mobile game.
Yeah, Rocket League Sideswipe, it's called, and it's soft launched in Australia and New Zealand. It's free to play, and the matches last about 2 minutes. It's going to be interesting to see how they monetize this, because a hallmark of a lot of these mobile games is loot boxes, and we know that Epic recently made a big move away from that.
I would imagine battle passes are going to be a big factor in Rocket League Sideswipe. Mm-hmm. What's going on at Starbreeze?
Tobias Shilgren has been named CEO of the company after serving as interim CEO. And of course, this comes after the company locked down a reported 50 million euro Payday 3 co-publishing deal with Koch Media.
That was a big one. I got my eyeballs on Starbreeze.
Yep.
I am pulling for them. I'm rooting for them. I hope everything turns out okay. Mm-hmm. So yesterday, Microsoft held an extensive ID at Xbox event, during which the company announced 22 indie games that will be coming to Game Pass, including Backbone, Boyfriend Dungeon, Hello Neighbor 2, and Drinkbox Studios' newly announced Nobody Saves the World. Microsoft has also shared that it has paid out $2 billion in royalties to ID at Xbox devs since the program launched in 2013.
That's rad. I'm a big fan of what Microsoft's doing right now.
Absolutely. And they were on the forefront of indies being on consoles. They really were. And I remember back in the day how difficult it was to work with any platform holder. And Microsoft was like, no, we don't want to be difficult to work with. So we're just going to put our money where our mouth is. And we want these titles on our platform. And mm-hmm. we will do what we can to support them. It's just great.
Yeah. And it's grown a lot over the generation. In fact, if you watch how platform holders have treated indies since the beginning of the Xbox One and PlayStation 4 generation, it's been very, very interesting to watch. And that's all I'm going to say for now. It's a much bigger story than I want to get into right now, but very interesting to watch.
Indeed.
Last quick hit. Steam Game Festival is coming back, and it will be called Next Fest, and it will take place from June 16th through 22nd. And if those dates sound familiar, that's when E3 was supposed to be. We know almost certainly there is no physical event between the reports that came out earlier, our own reporting last December. Yep. December?
It was December.
And then the Los Angeles convention, the government in LA noting on their calendar that the physical event was canceled. Of course, the ESA has not actually said, no, we have confirmed that it's not canceled. There may be a digital event, but I think they're having a hard time selling that to their membership as well, because the ESA has no core competency in putting on a digital event. And they certainly don't have any core competency in, I don't know, let's say protecting data.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that whole mess. So we'll see what happens as we get closer to June.
It'll be, yep. And I think that the other piece of the puzzle there is that LA County is still experiencing some really, really, really bad COVID numbers. Mm-hmm. Like, they have not gotten any better in LA County. They've just gotten worse. So, you know, stay home. Stay safe. Home.
Absolutely. And those were quick hits.
And now it's a break. Virtual Economy is an F-Squared initiative, and along with pro bono business consulting for up-and-coming developers, it's a way we are working to give back to the community that has already given us so much. To find out more about F-Squared and the services we can provide, including pitch prep, media training, mock reviews, and business strategy guidance, visit our website at fsquared.biz. And we're back.
Okay. Kicking off the bottom half of the show with a story that I saw and did some digging into. It's just weird, but because it is a piece of reporting that I did years and years and years ago, I really wanted to talk about it. I'm gonna blow through it pretty quickly. Majesco is back.
Okay, so the only reason why I know Majesco at all is because I love Cooking Mama.
I know you love Cooking Mama.
I am better than Mama.
You better because, than Mama.
But I am Cooking Mama.
You are Cooking Mama. So Majesco, my favorite Majesco story is Advent Rising and that $1 million competition that they had to scrap because it was a giant mess.
Oh no, that whole thing was horrifying.
So Majesco was actually really interesting to me when I was reporting on the THQ, their NASDAQ delisting warning back in 2012.
Oh, right.
Majesco was really interesting because they had been warned a number of times and they had always had a game come through that pulled them back from the brink. And Cooking Mama was one of those and Zumba Fitness was another one of those.
I always forget that Zumba's like, it was a thing. I don't think it's a thing anymore.
Do you remember Midnight City? It was an indie publisher that Majesco launched like a year before it ended up going kaput.
No, I actually don't remember that at all.
Yeah, that's it was wild. Really, really interesting. So, so they fell on hard times, and they were purchased in 2016 through a reverse merger, which is when a private company buys a public company and then by extension goes public.
Not to be confused with the SPAC.
Exactly. I'm so glad we held this story for this week because it makes so much sense. So they were purchased by Polarity TE, a biomed company. And at that time, they stopped making and publishing games. That also spelled the end of Midnight City, which was their indie publishing label, which could have had, you know, could have ended up competing with Devolver. Because at the time, there was Devolver and there really wasn't anybody else. So I think Midnight City kind of came up like, hey, we can do what Devolver's doing.
Yeah, but Devolver was also built out of the bones of Gathering of Developers, sure, which has been around since the late 90s.
There was fertile ground. Devolver was like the indie publisher, right? There wasn't a lot. Adult Swim didn't survive. Like, I mean, Adult Swim games like kind of exist, but the vision for Adult Swim games, what it was going to be, just fizzled. And then Midnight City went, but now you've got Fellow Traveler and you've got Raw Fury. So you've got companies like that that have really helped flesh out indie publishing.
Certainly.
So they were spun back off in 2017 as a private company run by co-founder Jesse Sutton. By the way, Majesco's right here in New Jersey.
Oh, I keep forgetting that.
Yeah, it's wild, huh?
That's weird.
Yeah. They were then acquired by Liquid Media Group in January 2018. But why are we talking about this?
Well, because Majesco is set to release his first retail game in 7 flipping years this June.
And it's called Geminos Animal Pop Stars. Chances are, you probably won't play it. But it was really interesting to me.
I don't even think Vivi would play it.
It was really interesting to me that after 7 years, Majesco is now operating. They've been publishing some digital games.
Yeah.
But this is their first retail game in 7 years. So listen, it comes out on June 18th.
I just want Cooking Mama.
Cooking Mama. But well, that's being published. There's a new Cooking Mama game that just came out on PS4.
No, that thing was a whole mess. Was it not? Was that not the whole like gambling mess underneath it?
No, I thought there was a different one.
Oh, gosh.
Was that a different Cooking Mama?
I don't bloody well remember.
Oh, Cooking Mama has done some illicit shit.
Anyway, clearly I don't remember, but I want Cooking Mama on Switch. Please and thank you. I really would like this so much.
We got a couple of earnings reports.
Let's go into the one that's fun.
Yeah.
The first one we're going to talk about is Razer. So they had record revenue of $1.21 billion in 2020, which is up 48%.
That's huge.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. So hardware sales were up 52% and made up $1.088 billion of total revenue, which is up 51.8% year over year. Peripherals made up $773 million of that. And systems, so like their gaming laptops and everything mm-hmm. like that, were $310 million.
The rest of their sales were from payment services, making up $128.4 million. That's up 66.8%. That includes Razer Gold, which is their global game payment service.
Interesting.
And they have Razer FinTech,
what?
Which is emerging markets FinTech services.
It's wait, what? B2B. What?
Wild, what? Right?
I didn't even know that existed.
Yep. So their software, which is Synapse, which isn't great. It runs it's the software that runs like all of the updates for their peripherals.
Yeah.
And they got Chroma RGB, which I guess is specific for their Chroma line. Yeah. And then they have their Cortex game launcher. They have 123 million users. That's up 53.8% year over year. This is the first time the company was profitable since its IPO. It IPO'd in 2017 when it lost 165.8 million. They lost $97.9 million in 2018, $83.5 million in 2019. So my big question for Razer is, obviously we saw this huge spike because of the pandemic, right?
Oh, yeah.
So are they going to be able to maintain this post-pandemic?
It really depends on whether or not people are going to be hungry for gaming peripherals mm-hmm. going through. Like, are we going to continue to see online and digital spaces make up the primary way that we interact with our loved ones? And likely, more likely than not, probably not.
Yeah. They did a fitness band once. I had a beta version of it. It was very rigid.
Oh.
So you know the problems you have had with your Fitbit? Imagine that as hard plastic, like all the way around your wrist.
My tiny wrist? Yeah. No, thank you.
It's it had some really interesting ideas, and it was before smartwatches, like, were popping full text messages up and stuff on your wrist.
Sure.
Look, they do a lot of things, and they experiment. They always do really well at CES with their experimental products.
Yes.
One thing very interesting, that mask, that RGB mask,
yep,
is going into development. It's going into production. I'm going to have a Razer RGB mask. I'm going to RGB everything. I am not ashamed to RGB my face.
This is for science, people. It's for science.
So yeah, Razer has zero debt right now, and they have $600 million in cash in the bank.
That's amazing.
So even though they had been losing money, this year has been really good to them. It's just, can they keep it up?
We'll have to see. It really depends on how much of that $600 million in cash they're going to funnel right back into R&D, because that's what Razer does.
Yep.
So Razer is also committed to going above and beyond focused on the environment. And that's a direct quote from Razer. So, quote, at Razer, many of our community are youth, the millennials and Gen Z. Okay, before we continue, just so we're clear, while I am younger, I am not the youth.
Well, that might be in series, like, the youth, the millennials, and Gen Z.
Oh, okay.
As opposed to
wait a second.
The youth,
shouldn't it be? Shouldn't it be? No. Wait. Should be the youth, Gen Z, and millennials.
I can understand your confusion.
I am so confused. We're not young.
No, if you go millennials, Gen Z, and the youth,
that
or
makes
the
sense.
Youth, Gen Z, and millennials,
that's
then
fine.
You're going in some kind of
no, it's
order.
Okay. It's
but
okay.
But it's comma. It's a list separated
fine.
By comma as opposed
fine.
To a colon. The youths.
Millennials.
You know, the youths, the millennials and Gen Z. You're a youth still. You're 35 years old and you're a youth.
Why are you like this? Don't do that. Anyway, point being, so we want to ensure the world remains an arena we can all continue to play in. All of us need to do our part in making our world a better place. And together with the Razer community, we are taking responsibility with our hashtag GoGreenWithRazer movement to drive towards a sustainable future. So what they are planning to do, and I love environmental initiatives, especially from hardware companies, because they are polluters. So to that end, they are going to be 100% in use of recycled and recyclables by 2021, the end of 2021, 100% renewable energy by 2025, 100% carbon neutrality within the next 10 years. That is incredible. Consumer transparency with carbon consumer labels in 2022, 100% of all Razer products can be recycled by Razer by 2025. Note to self, hold on to my laptop until 2025 and then I can recycle it. 100% products to use recycled or recyclable materials by 2030, and they will be saving 1 million trees worldwide. We love a company that loves the environment.
Yep, it's really good. I was very happy to see this.
This is an EA thing.
Yeah.
EA does the same kind of stuff.
That was,
I love
yeah.
it.
So kudos to Razer for having such an excellent year. We do have one more set of earnings to discuss. We got to talk about GameStop.
Oh, boy.
In news that will surprise literally no one who has been watching and understands the gaming business, which...
Apparently you don't.
There was a Twitter thing that happened.
You don't understand the game industry. You've written books about it, but that's fine.
I moved on. GameStop did not deliver earnings that support the current share value. And the share price has fallen a bit. It went all the way down into like the 110s. And now it's back up at 178 right now. All right, we need to talk about it. So first of all, the call only lasted 20 minutes. Now, here's the thing. If you've ever listened to an earnings call, you know how long they last. If you haven't, they're about an hour long.
They're usually an hour because they have to have the presentation. They have the slides. And then they take questions from investors.
Exactly. So there were no questions on this call. It was literally just rattling down what the press released in the numbers.
Why?
And they took no questions. Well, first of all, the call was jam-packed. You could not get into the call. Because everybody's like, go to the moon! And we're like, I just want to listen to the freaking numbers.
Can we ask salient questions?
Well, that's I think they were afraid that there were going to be a bunch of people on the call trying to ask questions who... It was going to turn into a Nintendo general shareholder meeting, and questions
That's fair.
Are a nightmare.
Those are a nightmare. Okay.
So let's start with the numbers. Revenues for the fourth quarter, which ended on January 31st of this year, were $2.122 billion versus $2.194 billion the year before. And I want you to hold on to that number, the fact that they were down in the fourth quarter of this year. Because we're going to have a talk about what that says.
Goodness gracious. Yeah. Oh, I know what that says.
Yep. GameStop is spinning this, of course. The company is leaning again on its, quote, comparable store sales, which adjusts for the fact that GameStop has closed more than 1,000 stores, 693 of which were closed in 2020, with more closures planned. Comparable store sales were up 6.5% year over year during fourth quarter. e-commerce is, of course, part of that. And it was up 175% for fourth quarter and 191% for the full year. Again, driven by COVID-19.
Indeed.
So SGA, which is sales, general, and administrative expenses, were down $419.1 million. So they were down 18% year over year and down for the quarter. And they were down $408.5 million. So they were down 21.2% for the full year. They posted positive income for the quarter of $80.5 million, but posted full year losses of $215.3 million. That's better than the $470.9 million they lost in fiscal year 2019.
Oh, boy.
So they added new board members last year, including Alan Atal, Jim Grube, and Chewy founder Ryan Cohen. And we're going to talk about him in a bit because you can't talk about GameStop these days without talking about Ryan Cohen.
Indeed.
But we need to dig into this a bit because things are not good. And I am sorry, the share value is way overpriced again.
Oh, it's completely overvalued. Absolutely overvalued. There's no doubt.
So a big piece of why GameStop is able to show better losses, I guess, this year, is that it has been doing an effective job of managing its expense side. So they've closed stores, which in turn reduces inventory needs and inventory carrying costs. Yep. It reduces rents. It reduces insurance. It reduces wages because you're not employing people to work those stores.
And in addition, it gets you're getting rid of legacy inventory because you remember those blind boxes that they were selling?
Yeah, you want this box.
And, you know, that's helpful.
Yeah, so inventory costs were down 30% and they decreased accounts payable by 10%.
Right.
Again, if you're calling in smaller amounts of inventory because you have smaller stores, yeah, your accounts payable are going to be lower.
Sure, and then you can sell the buildings, but then lease it back.
Right, and this is talking about their buildings in Grapevine, Texas, where sold five buildings, and then they immediately leased them back. So you get that huge infusion of cash, but you're just paying it out in rents. You don't have the assets at that point. So if you're only looking at the P&L and you're not looking at the balance sheet, then great. And they are still trying to and have not been successful in selling the company jet.
Because nobody wants a company jet right now. Like, come on, man.
Yep. And they closed their operations in Denmark, Finland, Norway, and Sweden with plans to further wind down in Europe, it seems.
So this is not the most shocking portion of this story.
No, this is not the most shocking part. And that's why we kind of blew through it pretty quickly.
So this is not the most shocking part. So Mike came to me the other day and he's like, so hey, guess what? 8 members of the board, of the 13 total.
And by the way, the 13th member is George Sherman. So it's 12 at-large board members plus the CEO.
Anyway, so 8 of them are set to leave the board at the annual meeting. So, Mike, who's leaving?
Reggie.
Oh, boy.
So, Reggie joined the board in March of 2020.
Yep.
And
we reported on it.
Yeah, so this is enormous turnover for a company's board of trustees.
This is unprecedented. Yeah. It's unprecedented. So, I don't think I've ever seen something like this.
Interestingly, so when you file your earnings every year with the SEC, or every quarter, you have to file what's called a 10-K form.
Mm-hmm.
And in that 10-K form is a list of worst-case scenarios, right? And we've seen in 10-K forms across the world, like COVID obviously being a huge risk.
Absolutely. And that's not a surprising thing for us to see throughout the last 12 months and probably for another 12 months tailing.
Yes. So in the 10-K, here's what it says. As of the date of this Form 10-K, the board has not determined the definitive slate of nominees for election at our 2021 annual meeting, but currently expects that the following incumbent directors will retire from the board at the 2021 annual meeting. Elizabeth Dunn, Paul Evans, Raul J. Fernandez, Reginald Fizemi, William Simon, James K. Simanchik, Carrie W. Teffner, and Kathy P. Vrabeck. Let's see.
Turnover among our board may disrupt our operations, our strategic focus, or our ability to drive stockholder value. If we fail to attract and retain new skilled personnel for our board, our business and growth prospects could disrupt our operations and have a material adverse effect on our operations and business.
Now remember, the SEC filings and the risks are worst case scenario.
They are.
They have probably already identified most, if not all, the people they want to take these seats. But it really, so they also have a capital allocation committee now, which is 3 people, Atal, Ryan Cohen, and Kurt Wolf, who I believe was installed as part of the shareholder revolt we talked about.
So Mike, what would the capital allocation committee be responsible for?
Hold that thought.
Okay.
Because we're going to talk about it.
Okay, all
right. But this, that dovetails with something we will be talking about.
I love it. I love that you can always know when you're writing a piece because it will either have dovetails or knock-on effect in it.
So, in addition to the departure of CFO Jim Bell, Chief Commerce Officer Jim Hamlin announced his departure this week. Hamlin was in charge of the company's efforts to revamp the in-store experiences.
Oh boy.
Like Bell, Hamlin was allowed to leave for, quote, good reason, earning $2 million as he walked out the door. Reminder, Bell earned $2.8 million for the same nonsense good reason explanation. It's another ouster.
It has to be, yeah. Because he's not doing it. He didn't do the job that he was hired to do.
Yeah. But here's the thing. The SEC finally includes this. And this is the special event, the unexpected event thing. So when he decided to leave. Hamlin will be removed from his role immediately and serve as senior advisor through the separation date, which is March 31st.
Oh.
Yeah. Interesting, right?
Very interesting. So it also turns out that there will be no annual bonus, which, but provided he complies with the terms, including a signed release.
Which you can read the entirety of in the SEC filing.
Indeed. He'll get his, quote, good reason parachute, which includes 18 months of COBRA for him and his dependents.
So they're not giving him his health insurance per se. What they're saying is you can apply for COBRA, which allows you to pay out of pocket through to your employer's plan, but they're going to reimburse him for his COBRA for his entire family. It's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. And I mean, it's not the
$2 million bonus that like the golden parachute that he's going to have.
But, all right. Oh boy.
So remember I said to hold on to that thought about the asset allocation committee, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they have now hired Jenna Owens, formerly of Amazon and Google, as the chief operating officer. That position was vacant since 2019.
I mean, that's great that they're finally filling that role.
Yes. She's going to make $200,000.
Okay.
Plus she got $2.5 million in sign-on bonuses that'll be paid over 24 months.
Uh-huh.
And they're giving her a year's salary for relocation. So
I'm sorry, what?
$200,000 for relocation.
$200,000 for relocation? $200,000.
Remember, most of the world has to scrape for $5,000 or $10,000.
I was about to say, I'm like, I don't even think we had...
Hold on. There's like $9 million in stock awards on top of it.
Okay.
She drove a hard bargain.
Yeah, clearly.
So there's Nita Pacifico. She's been hired as the VP of e-commerce.
She used to be at Chewy.
She was the VP of e-commerce at Chewy, so worked with Brian Cohen. Huh. And Ken Suzuki has been hired as VP of Supply Chain Systems. He was formerly VP of e-commerce at J2 Global. Do you sense a theme here?
Yes, Amazon and Google. Do.
Mostly Amazon is the one that I'm gravitating to for their COO.
Yeah.
VP of e-commerce from Chewy, so someone who worked closely with Ryan Cohen.
Yeah.
Ken Suzuki, VP of e-commerce at J2, and now he's the VP of Supply Chain Systems. So when you talk about what is that asset allocation committee going to do, this is all part of a huge pivot to e-commerce.
Interesting.
The old guard is getting pushed out. Probably a good thing, but a reminder that shareholder criticisms are about the C-suite and the board that are not financially invested in the company. So whomever they bring in, they have to secure some kind of guarantee from them that they are going to buy stock in the company so that they're financially invested in its well-being. So e-commerce, that's where GameStop wants to be. In fact, if you go back, Ryan Cohen had this big idea. GameStop can compete with Amazon was like his big thing.
Okay. So, okay, Derry. Derry, okay. So, okay. How?
So, it would require a full pivot.
I mean,
it would have to be a complete revamp of what GameStop is. So, that means product expansion. And then we've already seen that finally we're going to start doing some stuff with PC hardware. But remember, they also wanted to get Steam machines on the shelf, so I imagine a lot of this, they're not going to be able to sell any of that stuff in stores. There's no shelf space for it.
No.
The product supply is too inconsistent. In stores,
they need to move specifically to gaming and to light merch.
Yep. But I think what's likely for GameStop over the coming years, if Ryan Cohen, and based on this, you know,
they're going full e-com.
I think they're going to wind down retail in a major way.
It would make good sense.
And at some point, if they try to realize this vision, I looked up the market cap, by the way, and GameStop right now with its current share price, the market capitalization is around $12.5 billion.
Okay.
Amazon, $1.55 trillion.
Yeah.
This is not David and Goliath. This is Goliath and the ant he accidentally stepped on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that. Yeah.
So if they accomplish this, as I tweeted about this, if they accomplish this, it's not going to be GameStop anymore. No. They're going to have to change the name.
Yeah.
And it's going to be virtually unrecognizable.
I don't necessarily think that they'll need to change the name. They can keep the name, but the name doesn't have the same cachet that it used to.
I don't know what, if I think of Amazon, Amazon's kind of amorphous, right? Like, why does it have to do with Amazon? But GameStop selling dog food?
Okay, so that is the issue, is that if we're talking specifically about they want GameStop to be able to compete with Amazon with regards to Amazon gaming and Amazon selling games.
No, I think they want to compete with Amazon, not Amazon's game business. I think they want to compete with Amazon.
All right, that's an out to lunch perspective. It genuinely, in this year of 2021, Amazon is nigh unstoppable. It would not surprise me if this is something that absolutely went sideways within the next 24 to 36 months.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I don't fully understand, like, the amount.
Why would you say we want to compete with Amazon when you can barely compete with Best Buy?
And you can't compete with Target. Like,
yeah, exactly. Well, these are big, the thing. They're big box stores. And if we're talking about they want to compete with the biggest big box store on the internet, you need, like, significant investment needs to be made into the company, and not just in terms of your personnel, but in terms of the ways in which you handle everything. Like, yeah, great. I'm glad that they have Ken Suzuki working on the supply chain systems, and that's awesome. But which warehouses? How are they going
to
do this?
How many people are going to have to pee in bottles to make this work?
Right? I mean, come on. So, Anyway, point being, I don't think that GameStop is going to be able to maintain the gaming e-com stuff, let alone any other e-com stuff.
And let's talk about that for a second. The pandemic has been excellent for their e-commerce. It has been devastating for their stores. Their e-commerce experience sucks.
It's very bad.
Like, I tried to buy 2 Amiibo. They would have arrived to me not this week because they don't do overnight or release date shipping. And they come out on the same day. Yeah. They wanted to charge me $6 shipping for each one. They couldn't group them into one box.
Sure.
But imagine if they had shown up and they were grouped into one box and they wanted to charge me the $6 each. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I don't want to shop there. And I know that a lot of people do not like GameStop.
No, they treat their employees really terribly. And if they think that turning this into an e-commerce platform is going to end up ensuring that their people are taken care of, that corporate culture is broken and it's gross. And there's nothing good can come of this. From my perspective, this is not a sweeping statement that should be taken as anything other than my opinion. Mm. In my opinion, this is not a good place to go. This is not a good pivot.
I'm curious what their net promoter score is. It's probably in the toilet, right?
It's gotta be.
So the other thing is, remember how I said that their Q4 earning their sales were down? They missed targets. Missed targets in general.
Like, how did they manage during a console release cycle with two major consoles that have two variations apiece? How do you mess this up?
Now, generously, supply constraint, which we've talked about.
Right.
But here's the thing. It's not just that their sales were weak. Their sales were weak compared to holiday 2019, their fourth quarter 2019.
Exactly.
Which were absurdly weak. Like, they should have at least matched last year, Q4.
Especially based on how many opportunities they've had to shore up.
Yeah, it's absolutely bonkers.
Okay.
So, my big takeaway from GameStop is they are doing an excellent job managing their costs. They are handling their expenses really well. They're handling their retail footprint really, really well. But none of that speaks to building a revenue side business.
No.
At all. And none of this communicates that GameStop has a good offering, just that they're delivering a poor offering very, very badly. Or they were delivering a poor offering very, very badly. And now they're delivering that same miserable experience with less expense.
Yeah. You know what? Well, sir, I don't like it.
I don't like it either.
I don't like it at all.
All right, last story of the day.
You know what I do like?
I do like this story.
This is a good story. Mike, since this is your story, this is something that you were deeply invested in this week, let's walk me through, walk us through, what is going on with Discord looking to get married?
So, VentureBeat.
Going to the chapel and we're
gonna drop $10 billion. So, VentureBeat broke the news early this week. Discord is apparently looking for a buyer, not the first time, by the way, with a price tag that could be more than $10
billion. 10 billion bells for Tom
At
Nook.
Least. It could be more than that.
Amazing. Tom Nook's going to be so happy.
Yep. Yeah, Tom Nook's going to roll in those bells. GamesBeat mentioned that one company was in the forefront with Microsoft, Google, Twitter, and Amazon, all likely prospects. My story, I looked at all four of those companies, what those fits might look like. One of them came out on top, in our opinion. And this isn't just my opinion writing this piece. This is our shared opinion.
Yeah. And we talked about this when we first saw the news break. We're just like, so it's going to be Microsoft though, right?
And that's what it seems, because Bloomberg later reported that Microsoft seemed to be in the lead. And then the Wall Street Journal reported yesterday, maybe the day before, that Microsoft was in exclusive talks with Discord, kicking everybody else to the curb. No, it's not.
It's not surprising at all. It's a really interesting fit. But you know what? You went really deep into analysis on this one. And I don't want you to spoil this, because mm-hmm. the piece is excellent. So go read it. We link to it in the show notes. Read it. But without spoiling everything, can you give us like the broad strokes?
Sure. So Discord has 100 million monthly active users.
I'm so proud of them.
Me too. Their revenue profile. Now, remember, all reports and all indications are they're not making money yet. They, without a buyer, they're on the path to IPO.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's not surprising that they're not making money yet. The money they make is from Nitro subscriptions. And from buying straight up boosts for servers to get mm-hmm. better access. So better voice quality, better screen sharing, resolution, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So my feeling on this with regard to Microsoft. First, there's a synergy between Game Pass and Discord Nitro.
Oh yeah, big time.
And Game Pass being a large umbrella for a lot of different things is starting to make a lot of sense. More sense.
Yup.
With every new announcement. Microsoft has also embraced being platform agnostic where appropriate. Mm-hmm. So there are, and I ran into this conversation with somebody I went to college with, and it's like, okay, Microsoft has built communities with Xbox Live. They have done a great job shepherding and being a custodian for Minecraft.
Yep.
This is not, and this is the big takeaway, and I think that people keep pointing, well, look at Mixer, look what happened to Mixer. When they purchased Beam, they were purchasing an underdog going up against the massive powerhouse that Twitch is.
Yeah, absolutely, and not just Twitch anymore, also YouTube, and, well, to a lesser extent, Facebook Gaming.
Ooh.
Gross.
Sorry, I just threw up in my mouth.
Yep. Nasty.
So, if purchasing Discord, you're purchasing a market leader.
You are.
Now, I think someone... And then the next thing is, well, they already have Teams, and they already have Skype. Now, I could actually see Microsoft Teams benefiting from this, and potentially Absolutely. Being sunset as a brand. I think there's value in having an enterprise brand, but nobody seems to really like Teams. So you could sunset the Teams brand and
turn it into Discord Business.
Exactly. Or Discord for Enterprise.
Yeah, Discord for Enterprise or whatever, because Slack has their Discord, or Slack has their integration for Enterprise as well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, why not have an enterprise offering when you're doing something? Honestly, like, Discord is the market leader. They really, really yeah. are.
And as for Skype, maybe it is time to sunset Skype.
You know, as somebody who uses Skype on a literal weekly basis to record a podcast, I think I'd be okay with Skype never using Skype again.
Yeah. Discord does everything Skype does, and a lot of it does better.
Yeah. Everything Skype can do, Discord can do better.
Yeah, and the fact that Skype didn't thrive during the pandemic, the way Zoom did, I think that says it right there. If Skype
it's not as accessible as Zoom. Like, Zoom is just like, here's the link, go.
You need to be like, here's my name, let's be friends, and let's do the thing.
Yeah, so it's like Skype morphed into this half social. It took all of the things that we used with like AOL and with AOL Messenger, with MSN Messenger, or Live Messenger is what it became. And it took all of the nonsense that we had to do with those, and then it ported it into a voice over IP application, mm-hmm. but it didn't grow. It didn't change. It didn't adapt. So it's just the same. It's the same thing with, you know, relatively okay technology that hasn't gotten any better.
I think Skype is going to suffer from the blockbuster syndrome. Like, we no longer need it.
I agree.
There are better options. Yep. Netflix came along in the form of Discord, as it were.
Sure.
And obviated.
A younger, hotter application came
along. Younger, hotter Skype came along. And
stole all the attention away.
I'm now writing fan fiction in my head.
Oh no!
Oh no! So look, there is a chance that, Discord might not sell. They have been averse to advertising in the past. Yep. And actually that, spoiler, that works into my analysis of some of the other partners.
This is really good.
Potential partners, anyway.
Yep.
And if they don't decide to sell, that would put them back on the road to going public, which likely wouldn't happen for a few years. They were only at founded least. In 2015?
They're not that old yet.
Yeah, 2016?
They're really not. And they're not, they're like, I have no idea. They need to figure out what they are still. Beyond just, hey, you can use this to chat with your buddies and, you know, everything like that. So anyway, if like, go read Mike's analysis piece. It's excellent. And it goes really, really deep into what we just glossed over in this episode.
Mm-hmm. And that is the entirety of this episode.
Holy crap. Did we keep this under 2 hours?
We kept it very close to an hour. And our goal here is, as we've been reworking things, and M&A Minute is a big piece of this, and doing the writing, which helps carry some of the load for some of the bigger stories, like the Discord story, mm-hmm. Is to try to get the podcast down as close to an hour as we can, so it's easier listening. You know, our first step in that was putting the timestamps in.
Yeah.
And now we're actually like, okay, how can we tweak our format a little bit to make things move a little bit
faster? Because we care about your time.
We do.
And time is money.
So thank you for listening to the Virtual Economy Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Virtual Econcast. I am at Footerish. F-U-T-T-E-R-I-S-H.
I don't know what I'd do without him spelling his Twitter name out. I am at Amanda Farrow, which will never be spelled out.
Ooh.
I know. You know what, though? If you did enjoy our witty banter, our repertoire, our back and forth, you can subscribe to our RSS feed at virtualeconcast.com. In fact, if you subscribe to that feed, I think we might have two feeds. It might be one. I don't remember. But if it is one master feed, it means you get our articles, too. Because, mm-hmm. Hello, we're writing again.
We are.
And if you just want the podcast, which is understandable, you can listen to us on all major podcast platforms, including Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Casts. Missing one.
Pocket Sand.
Oh, no! Pocket Sand. And you know what would be absolutely fabulous? If you enjoyed us, please subscribe. And if possible, we do love reviews for the show. Let us know what you think.
Yes, you can DM us with questions at Virtual Econcast. You can shoot us an email at podcast@fsquared.biz. You can hit us up if you have like secret information that we have signal. And we have a Discord.
We do.
And that is a great place because I actually posed this question today in the Discord. Hey, here are the topics we're covering.
We'll Anyone got any questions?
And we had a couple questions come in related to the Sony thing, which we ended up covering.
Yes.
So we had a couple people who were like, hey, here are the kind of things I want to hear you talk about related
no
to
No specific
Sony.
Questions, but definitely people that wanted more clarification on what is this
Yeah, I mean,
mean?
There were questions.
But we answered
Trevor
them.
Trevor had some questions, and here was one question we didn't answer. So Greg asked, if and when the PlayStation Store goes on PS3, PSP, and Vita, what title will you miss the most? The PlayStation 1 games. Honestly, for me, it's the PlayStation 1 classics that I really want to preserve because games like Vagrant Story, which desperately needs and deserves a remake / reboot. So that's my answer.
I actually don't know. I think that there are probably some PlayStation portable games that I would probably miss.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like a lot of the games that I love have ports on Switch. They have mm-hmm. ports on PlayStation or on Steam.
Port all the things to PC.
Honestly, port all the things to PC, because I would say if Persona 4 Golden didn't have its Steam port, that would be the game that I would miss the most.
We have a physical copy of it.
That's okay. I mean, that's also great.
Yeah.
I'm happy for us.
Play Parasite Eve Madness is really what it comes down to.
Wait.
I'm just saying you should play Parasite Eve.
Okay, well, that's lovely.
We'll be back next week to talk about Parasite Eve.
It's a new Parasite Eve stan cast. Anyway, so I don't know. I don't know what I would miss the most. Patapon, probably. I love Patapon. Pon, Patapon. I love those Patapon games. They're so awesome. And what else are we doing? So we've got our Discord, mm-hmm. which if you would like to join the Discord, DM us. We'll send you the link.
Yes.
But we're writing.
We're writing. We'll have more pieces this week. Our plan is to each write one piece a week.
Yeah. It's been good.
It's been good.
It's been nice to get back into, you know, like, writing chops.
Yeah. So if there is, that's the other thing, too. If you're in the Discord, hit us up. If there's something specific you'd like a little deeper dive on, give us some ideas. We'd love to field those requests and see what we can do.
Absolutely. So we will be back next week as per usual. And remember to wash your hands, to stay hydrated, and be good to one another.
We'll see you next week.